You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I think, honestly, you know, overall, when this is all blown over, I think this is good for baseball. I mean, when's the last time they were in this many headlines? This is just, you know, my opinion, but baseball's relevant. They had a good offseason. All the big free agents signed early. You're staying in the headlines every day. You're having people come out every day and make news. I mean, obviously, this isn't good for the game in terms of the integrity of the game and things that you protecting the sanctity of these World Series championships. But in terms of the marketing of baseball, if you want heroes and villains, Alex Bregman, Aaron Judge, Cody Bellinger, these dudes are stepping up and saying, hey, you know, I'm ready to play one of those roles.
I'm Ben Stiller and Pete is Eddie Murphy. This is Tower Heist because I am stealing this. I am stealing this topic from my friend Chad Dukes. I am stealing this idea from Sam Fortier of the Washington Post.
Well, at least you're courteous in saying you're taking it from them.
It's half and half because it's like saying I'm going to swing my arms wildly and if I hit you, it's your fault. Well, it's still my fault for swinging my arms. Like, I'm definitely stealing it, but maybe it's a little bit cushioned by the fact that I'm telling you I'm stealing it. But I heard that driving Ute in a boot the other day on a Tuesday. I heard that, right? And I went, like that. Put my finger over my mouth and went, and I thought about it. And I like that. So what Sam Fortier was answering, a question about ultimately what everyone likes to do, the guardians of the game, old people who fret about everything that's not the exact same as it was in the 1960s, right, who get very, very upset at any sort of changes or tweaks to try to make the game more popular. Because to me, if it's 90% of the game that I love but more people care about it, that's good. That's what I want. I want my kids to care about it. I want them to grow up as Nationals fans and be able to pass this on the way my dad passed it on to me. That's all I want. So if I got to tweak it, if I got to have more guys pimping doubles, then so be it. If I got to have a gesture after every base hit, so be it. If I got to have things that I don't like about the game, I'm still in. I still love baseball. So the question that always comes up is this bad for the game? Is this bad for the game? The way concussions were the blight of the NFL for so long, ratings continue to soar. Is this bad for the game? Is this a blight? It doesn't affect anybody other than the players, obviously. But in terms of viewership, nobody's turning off because of Ray Rice. Nobody turned it off because of Kaepernick. Nobody turned it off because of concussions. A lot of big talk, but maybe individuals did, but the ratings didn't suffer. Ratings are still fine and dandy like sour candy. They're still crushing it. Sam's point about baseball, this objectively isn't good that the Astros were cheating. Here's what is good. There are 29 cities where those SOBs are the villain. They don't know what to do with themselves, Pete. The Astros don't know how to handle being the villain because they were the good story. They were the well-run organization. Now, the more we peel back the layers, we find out that how poorly they treat people and how some of these guys are underpaid. It's not a fun place to work, and it's just this data math equation that governs everything with some really good players who now we know are very unlikable. But they're the villains. You know what makes a good movie? A good villain.
Yeah. I said that on the Nats Hot Stove show a couple of weeks ago. I said baseball now has a team that every time they show up in a city, people are going to turn out just because, oh, it's the Astros. I've got to get out there and let them have a piece of my mind when they come to our town. And I think you're going to see, I would love to watch the road crowds in every city that they go to and compare them to the road crowds of when the Astros came to their city last year, just to see if those cities enjoy a little bit of a boost when Houston comes to town because a fan feels like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to give them a piece of my mind when Alex Bregman comes to the plate and Jose Altuve comes to the plate. And then I've seen people who've reacted publicly that when the Astros come, I'm not going to go. But all that does is hurt your own franchise when you don't go when the Astros come to your building. So it's kind of a catch-22 if you go about it in that manner as a fan by not showing up when the Astros come to town because you hurt your own ball club at the same time. I think it's fascinating. It's going to be a fascinating storyline every single week of the year. The national reporters are going to be Buster Olney, Jason Stark, all these guys are going to be sniffing that Astros exhaust every single city that they go to, because this is going to be a fascinating storyline all year long. And, oh, by the way, guess what? The Astros are going to win the American League West again. And guess what? They're going to be in the playoffs again.
Oh, yeah.
And guess what? They could go to the World Series again. And what a great storyline that would eventually be for Major League Baseball if that happens.
When the Astros play the Yankees, it's going to be must-see television.
Oh, my gosh. It's going to be great.
When's the last time Major League Baseball had must-see television? ESPN would like us to believe that every time the Red Sox and Yankees get together, we have to watch it.
Well, they show it to us every time they play each
other. And they
shove
it down your gullet. It's a great rivalry. We get it. Rest Peter Gammons for a weekend, one time.
And the Red Sox sucked last year, so we didn't need to see them on national TV as many times. Sorry.
When Houston travels to New York, I cannot wait. When opening day happens, maybe not opening day because you don't want to spoil opening day. Maybe game two happens, whoever the Astros open up the season with. I'm trying to find their exact schedule, right? It looks like they're playing the Angels. What are we doing? Somebody buzzed in a tower? Is Altuve getting plunked? And somebody's going to grab his shirt and pretend not to want to take it off? Well, is someone getting to Correa, going to bark at him for lashing out at everybody? Does somebody want Bregman? They're going to put up a four like that jackass Alex Bregman does every time he hits a homer? You should have walked me with four balls? Well, you shouldn't have known what's coming, Breggy. How about this fastball? Do you know that was coming in your hip? I can't wait. This is good.
Maybe now, Mike Trout goes like 6 for 11 in the series with four home runs, and every time he goes by, he just kind of drops his bat over at first base and holds up four fingers.
Or you hit a double and you get on second base, you look through a pair of binoculars, you pretend you're holding a camera. I mean, you pretend you're Oscar the Grouch banging a trash can. Think of all the things that could happen. This objectively is not good. No team wants to wear this, right? This is a bad thing on a binary, one or zero. Just in terms of the act and their behavior since then, the commissioner's behavior since then. But I'm telling you, this has made things intriguing. In a regional sport, which is what baseball now is, right? It was the national pastime. Now it's the regional attendance and local cable TV ratings pastime.
Look, outside of, obviously, we're, you know, you, Grant, myself especially, we're lucky enough to do some work directly with the Nationals. So we're around the team, and obviously we love all the guys on that team. But my favorite baseball player over the last couple of years outside of the local area has been George Springer. I love watching George Springer play baseball.
Sure.
But certainly watching him this year and watching that team this year becomes a different view just because of what advantages they were giving themselves over the last couple of years against the opposition. I'll be intrigued to see how that entire roster plays this year. Now, I believe they're going to win 90-plus games again, even without
They'll
Gerrit Cole in the rotation.
They'll sleepwalk to 90 wins, Pete. They're excellent.
Right. But that's – and I want to see how they play this year. And unfortunately, Danny, they could go through clean seasons now for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they're always going to be affiliated with that team. And I think that's the one good thing. If you're Will Harris, you got out of there. You're getting to a different culture.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a chance to find success. And obviously, as a pitcher, you weren't necessarily as involved with it as much as it was for the field players and the batters. But, you know, for guys... I think some guys may eventually look to get out of there because their legacy is going to be tainted no matter what, especially if they can't get out of there for a number of years to show people, hey, I can do this. I can play this game even without some of the aid that I was getting back when we were using the signal stealing
system. I mean, think of this, Pete. The Oakland Athletics, that no one talked about at all, won 97 games last year.
Yep.
They were an afterthought. And they have a payroll fraction of the Astros and probably don't have the technology at that crappy Coliseum. You think that's going to be a welcome reception when they travel out to Oakland? You think those guys that already, by the way, their fans are already badass. They've already got drums. You think they can't go find a trash can? That's going to be awesome.
It was phenomenal the other day. The guy, while the Astros were taking batting practice, that the guy hits the, you know.
Banging on the trash can, rolls out.
That's just fabulous.
I mean, they got to go to New York. They got to go over the place. I mean, who knows what city's going to greet them the worst? They play here in Washington.
Hey. Yeah, July 4th weekend. By the way, what happens when they play Mike Fiers?
Yeah.
What happens when they play Mike Fiers?
Right?
Now, I mean, obviously, Mike's not going to come to play because he's a pitcher. And in the American League, the pitchers don't hit. But you know what? What if Mike Fiers all it got away from me. And he kind of drills somebody in the thigh, the hip. Look, if you're going to drill somebody, please don't go upstairs. Let's not hit him up by the shoulders and the neck area and the head and everything like that. But I could certainly see Mike Fiers somewhere during the course of one of those games, if he pitches, just drilling a 91-mile-an-hour fastball off somebody's hip. I can definitely see that. Hit him in the quad.
I can see it.
800-636-1067. I heard Sam Fortier on the Chad Dukes versus the World Radio program the other day. It was on a Tuesday. Say something that at first I went, no, stop it. This isn't good. Wait a minute. Maybe it is good for the game.
Yeah.
You wouldn't sign up for this, right? You wouldn't sign up for a massive cheating scandal being the only story. But I got news for you. People that aren't terribly interested in baseball are interested in this. Now, I don't know if that translates to, you know, Boog Xiaombi on Wednesday night for Wednesday Night Baseball. The ratings is going up by 500,000 people in June. I don't know if that translates there. But I know this. There's heat. There's interest. There's buzz. People hate the Astros, and they're correct to hate them. I hate them. I read every single thing written about those cheating bastards. I read every single thing about Rob Manfred. And this story is not going away. It continues to go because a lot of things haven't been addressed yet. And until it is, this isn't going to die down.
Baseball,
each story is going to continue on, Pete. Sorry, go
baseball
ahead.
Has needed, and I apologize for stepping on you there, but baseball has needed some sort of aggressive storyline. And unfortunately, when Mike Trout plays great baseball, we don't see it because he's playing in Anaheim on the West Coast. He doesn't talk much, so we don't hear from Mike Trout, the game's best player. You know, Bryce Harper in Philadelphia hits 250, so we don't necessarily hold him in the same regard. Even though he can hit home runs like some other players, he's not the superstar that we thought he could be. He could come back to that. I mean, still plenty of time for him to do that. But baseball's is absent of some storylines. And just as we've said all along here, the Nats are the world champions, completely overshadowed within 15 feet of their complex because of the people on the other side. Like Mike Rizzo said the first day, I mean, you know, there's four cameras over here. There's 47 over there. You know, with the on the Astros side. So I think it sucks because it's taken away from the world champions and obviously, you know, them reloading for another year.
800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. Buy or sell. The Sam Fortier / Danny Ruye, the IER last name theory, that this is actually good for baseball. Next on the Fan. About 11 minutes from right now, but at the moment, Sam Fortier was on with Chad Dukes, first of all, the other day. Tommy, let's grab that clip one more time if we can. The gist here is this Astros shebangus, this whole bit of nonsense with them cheating, their defiance, them thumbing their noses at us, the commissioner's botching of this, how soft all this has gone down, how angry the players are, how ticked off we are as a public, ultimately is good.
I think, honestly, you know, overall, when this is all blown over, I think this is good for baseball. I mean, when's the last time they were in this many headlines? This is just, you know, my opinion, but baseball's relevant. They had a good off season. All the big free agents signed early. You're staying in the headlines every day. You're having people come out every day and make news. I mean, obviously, this isn't good for the game in terms of the integrity of the game and things that you protecting. The sanctity of these World Series championships. But in terms of the marketing of baseball, if you want heroes and villains, Alex Bregman, Aaron Judge, Cody Bellinger, these dudes are stepping up and saying, hey, you know, I'm ready to play one of those roles.
The villain. It's clearly defined. Every fan base has villains, right? For years, I still do, I despise the Yankees, right? Because they spent five times as much as everybody else, had different rules. Derek Jeter flied out to right. It turned into a World Series championship. Still so annoying, right? And now you can have the Red Sox in there because of the long-suffering Sox fans, bro, it's had for us. I'm sure the only fan base that's ever suffered. So now they stink. Now that the Nationals are here, boy, do I hate the Mets because of everybody I went to college with. I hate the Phillies because of the same reason, and they're supremely annoying, and they came in here and ruined my time trying to go to Nats Park, etc. So there's plenty of hatred in individual cities. This is a universal villain, man. Everybody hates the Astros, Pete. I think that's good.
But I think at the same time, Danny, look at what it's done with individual players. A lot of times players avoid controversy across all sports. This has even reached to LeBron James on the NBA level where LeBron made a comment about it. So this is, look, pros are pros. Pros are the best in the game. All they want is a level playing field. And in this case, Houston went to egregious levels, Danny, to not play on a level playing field. I mean, that's just extraordinary level to go to try and win. And I think that's why everybody has been very comfortable coming out and being as outspoken as they've been so far at what the Astros did. Because there's, I mean, look, we talk about it all the time. You and I played baseball. you know, you're standing on second base. You're trying to lean to the right. You lean to the left, trying to give your batter maybe an indication of where location might be or something like that. Every Major League Baseball player will tell you.
We were bleeping code talkers doing that. Of course you figure that stuff out.
That stuff, look, everybody knows what that is. When you go to the level of what the Astros did, you're just spitting on the game. You're spitting on the spirit of the game and the spirit of competition and what it is. Now, you know, and look, if it was legal, everybody would be doing it. Everybody would have the same setup, and everybody would be doing it. And I think that's what has provoked every guy coming out comfortably coming out and just blowing away. Look at what some of the guys have said about the commissioner. I mean, you would never talk about the commissioner of your sport the way baseball players have had here because of the way Rob Manfred has mishandled this situation.
800-636-1067. Let's go to Emmett in Chantilly. Emmett, any chance this whole saga, as gruesome as it's been in terms of the PR hits and how everybody's botched all this, is there a chance this ultimately is good for baseball?
Yeah, I believe so, guys. Mainly because it's the same reason that, like, the steroid era is, like, that home run race between Sosa and Maguire whole thing, like, basically is considered to have saved baseball. Eventually, this will die out. And I just wanted to get your thought on another thing also. I was talking with my uncle, who's a lawyer. He was telling me that because of, like, the notice law, that Manfred knew from the beginning that punishing the players was never going to stick. So he gave them immunity right away. And, like,
about that,
he is thinking that, like, it's actually a conspiracy from the owners that they did this to create a divide in the union, because it is like knowingly the strongest union in the country, the MLB Players Union.
Emmett, thank you, buddy. I don't necessarily buy that it's a conspiracy theory to that level, Pete, but here's what I do buy. I've said this all along. I've been very adamant about this. The shadow in the background of the morgue, the unsuspecting victim. The shadow in the background here has always been the CBA negotiation that's coming up. And last year, there were a lot of upset players at how the free agency market went, the permutations of what tanking means for veteran players and a lot of other stuff. The players were mad. Things were starting to be okay. If you run afoul of the Players Association here, that could be damaging for those negotiations where everybody wants to get well, okay? I thought that was a huge deal. Knowing that the punishment, just as the caller just said, wouldn't be able to stick with CBA and the way things kind of are right now, and you don't want to run that risk, that combined to him just sort of kowtowing, talking about Manfred, mm-hmm. giving immunity right away. So I believe that the CBA negotiations and current agreement were absolutely tantamount to what happened.
I would agree with you 100% there, because once he gives them immunity, that means he doesn't have to fool with the Players Association on any potential discipline for the players and any fight back from those guys. So that's ultimately Manfred took the easy way out there. And, you know, and look, I mean, if he suspends them, there's really no precedent here for what length of suspension. How would you suspend, you know, so many of those guys? What about guys that are no longer on the team that were on the 17 team? Or do you suspend guys that were part of the 18 team? Or do we suspend guys that were part of the 19
unwieldy.
Team? Because we believe there was some sort of shenanigans even going on last year with the Houston Astros. I think the immunity thing was a way for him to get around having to deal with head on the Players Association in any way, shape, or form. And the caller's right.
And it shows their shortcomings as an investigative body. We always need to remember this.
No question.
Major League Baseball, the NFL, the NHL, the NBA, these are not professional investigative units. They're sports leagues. The NFL was woefully inadequate. They couldn't go, we can't figure out what happened with Ray Rice. TMZ took him an hour. Took one. The Washington Post took a phone call to figure out that Bruce Allen didn't call anybody down there with the Reuben Foster thing. Investigative bodies can do that.
Look at what the FBI
can't.
Did in college basketball, where the NCAA couldn't get those answers. The FBI had a ton of people on the hook. Yeah, we got them, Yep, we got this guy.
And an easy chair in Indianapolis, just not getting it right. Mike and Alexandria, quickly, what do you got on this, buddy?
Hey, guys, I agree. I think this is going to be good for baseball, but really only in the short term. What's going to happen to these free agents next 2-3 years? Are other teams like the Dodgers and the Angels or the Cubs or Yankees, are they going to take Carlos Correa, Jose Altuve? You know, are they going to welcome them into a new team? You look at the Nationals. They got rid of Bryce Harper, and our team got better because they gelled and they, you know, coalesced and they had a good time. So what's going to happen to these other teams and to the Astros? Are people going to want to go to the Astros, like these veterans who just they need one more piece? Mm. Are they going to be able to bring in a new team and really compete?
Good question, Mike. Appreciate it, buddy. We got Ryan Wilson.
Anybody's going to want a good player. So if Springer, Altuve, or any of those guys leave, the new team, new organization,
they can
take
deal
them.
With it. Yeah, but I see the point though about you know the reason this didn't come out earlier is players. You don't want to piss off a future employer. I mean, that's
no doubt.
You don't want to take away that option to be able to go somewhere.
Jim Crane's money is as good as anybody else's. Though.
Sure.
If they take you, you'll play for them.
All right, mentioned it. Ryan Wilson coming up next. NHL playoffs. I'm sure the NHL playoffs will be different someday. The NFL playoffs are a changing. Times they are a changing. Two huge songs in one segment, poorly sung by me. Ryan Wilson next. It's Grant Danny here on The Fan. Pedro is in. For GP, who is out sick, get better soon. Rest that voice up. Those vocal cords are important for Grant Paulson. I'm Danny Ruye. One more segment after this one. We still got to do this one first. We bring on our buddy Ryan Wilson, covers the NFL. Ryan, let's get into this. These rule changes. The bigger stuff is coming down the line, 17-game schedule. We will see what the deal is there. But it sounds like these playoff changes, two more teams, one in each conference, it sounds like this is happening, huh?
Yeah, that's going to be moving forward pretty quickly. Sounds like it's starting next year. And my initial reaction anytime NFL implements some changes discussed is to be skeptical. And you know, at the end of the day, we know what it's about. It's about money. But is it good for the game? At the end of the day, people like playoff football. And I think this is one of those things that you would much rather see more playoff football, for example, than necessarily a 17-game schedule, which the players are for the most part against, or you know, reducing the number of preseason games, which people are for, but what does that mean on the back end? So I think playoff football makes sense. Logistically, figuring out the seeding, that'll be interesting in terms of the uneven number of teams on each side, but it sounds like one team will get a bye instead of two. I think that creates more competition late in the season. Now, you could argue, okay, the seventh seed on each team, on each side of each conference, that's going to be a team that in all likelihood is not going to be a very good football team. Going back the last 10 years, I think the four times the Steelers would have made it, including last year. Look, they weren't a great team last year with Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph, we give you that. But again, that's more excitement for the fan bases and teams that are marginally on the line there. They have a chance to play football. If they start the season slow and then get hot late, they can prolong that. The other side of the argument is, well, win more football games. The Tennessee Titans did just that when they made the quarterback change, and they made a run to the AFC Championship game, and they had a legit chance to have a chance at the Super Bowl. They didn't have to sneak in as a number seven seed. So I can see both sides, but I'm actually okay with this. I have no issue with it, and I think it will make for more exciting football in late December and in January.
Yeah, Ryan, this is a simple way, too, for the NFL without really disrupting a whole lot of things or making any drastic changes. This puts, you know, more money and more people in your seats later in the season when your season may, in the past, be falling apart, yet you may still have a chance to cling to that seven seed. So that's more people in your park in weeks 15, 16, 17. It's more playoff shares for players. And obviously it's an extra home game for, you know, a team in the playoffs since only one team is going to have a bye here. So at least on the surface, this is nothing but positives for both sides, because I think we have to look at it that way. There's got to be a positive for the players and for the owners. This is a real simple way for the NFL to accomplish this.
Absolutely. And there's no concern about trying to sell the 17-game season, trying to say, well, listen, there will be no more preseason games. This is all about playoff football. Players can certainly get behind playoff football. They'll be getting paid for those weeks that they play. And you mentioned weeks 15, 16, 17. It's also exciting for those teams that are out of the playoff hunt and are hosting teams that are trying to make the playoffs. We see that now in terms of being the spoiler. There's more chances to do that with more teams now eligible for the playoffs. I think you're right. I think it's a win-win. It's an easy sell. This is sort of the thing you put out there first before you come with the hard negotiating tactics with the 17-game schedule, for example, and trying to get that over on a players' union that isn't exactly excited about the idea of making these guys play more regular season football games.
At Ryan Wilson, CBS on Twitter, must follow. Covers the NFL and the NFL draft for CBS Sports, one of our favorite guests. Ryan, you led me right into my next question here. I got a theory. Blow me out of the water, tell me I'm wrong, or tell me you agree, whatever, anywhere in between. I think when anybody from the owner's side leaks something out about the CBA and about the negotiations, we hear about how close everybody is and how swimmingly it's all going and we're on the same page. Anytime somebody gets something from the player's side of it, it's, we got some reservations in here. I don't know about 17 games. I don't know about the punishment or the revenue sharing, everything else. The owners want to keep it the same. The players want to change. What are your thoughts on my theory?
No, I think you're knocking out of the park, Danny. I think you're exactly right. The 17-game schedule, like everything that we talk about when it comes to the NFL, is about money. Billionaire owners want to make more money, and some millionaire players, and many of whom don't even make that much, are stuck in the middle, and they have to decide, do they want to move forward with the new CBA and get paid, or do they want to stage a holdout, which is sort of what we saw in 2011 when things got really contentious. It seems to be much less the case, much less contentious this time around, in order to take a stand. And the issue is, and this is what I say all the time, billionaires can wait out guys who make six figures and some who make seven figures a year if at the end of the day it's about money. And these players, on average, play 4 or 5 years. They have to pay their bills. They have families to take care of. They're not in a position financially, even though they make the top 5% of what U.S. wage earners make, to say, you know what, we won't get paid until we get what we want. It's not set up to have success that way. The NFLPA has made it clear they're against the 17 games, and for good reason. And that the NFL is of the opinion, and they certainly seem to be, that they're trying to reduce head injuries. Adding an extra football game doesn't reduce head injuries. It's the exact opposite effect. Never mind the lower body injuries, the ACLs and all that stuff. But, you know, money rules, and that's where we're at. And they're going to have to give more money, the owners are, to the players in terms of revenue share to make this work. I think they're leaning towards that. I suspect it gets done, if for no other reason than what I just said. The owners can wait out these players as long as they want.
Ryan, do we shrink the preseason and either OTAs or part of training camp as a compromise to try and get that 17th game as well?
Dear God, let us hope. Let's hope they shrink the preseason. I would be okay with that. I don't think anyone loves a preseason. Maybe coaches, just as a chance to evaluate those guys at the bottom of the roster, whether they can make the team in week four of preseason based on how they played against a bunch of other guys that probably won't make the roster. Other than that, I don't see any reason to have those preseason games. Injuries are obviously a chance to happen in those games and with no real upside. So if they reduce it by one or two games, I can't imagine anyone complains about it. And they get right to the regular season, all the better as far as I'm concerned.
And so, Ryan, you touched on this a moment ago, but the owners obviously had the leverage. The billionaires are always going to have leverage over millionaires, right? They could take the air out of the ball and wait this thing out, and they've got the hammer, which is a lockout that the players, you know, don't have the same, you know, sort of ability. I mean, a strike is different than a lockout, certainly. The owners can go forever. What do you think happens here? How much concession do you think the players get? Because I don't know. I mean, there's the occasional person that sides with the owners. Although it's, you know, the billionaire class is not the most popular in our country at the moment. But I don't think anybody's ever shown up to a stadium to see an owner, you know, sip tea or eat meatballs out of a crock pot. They see the players. That's the people tend to usually sort of side with here in terms of negotiations and who should get more money. How do you think this plays out here over the next several months?
No, you're right, Danny. Here's what happened. So, you know, we talked about the playoff expansion, and that's sort of an olive branch extended by the owners, disguised as, hey, look, we're making concessions already. And they're going to come back and counterpunch with what they want. And look, we talk about Joe Burrow having no leverage in terms of whether he wants to go to Cincinnati or not. The players, at the end of the day, don't have much leverage long term. They can hold out. Maybe even they can hold out for half the season next year. But they're coming back, and the owners know that. So owners just have to wait them out. In 2011, when they redid the CBA, on the table was, we need Roger Goodell to have less power when it comes to punishing these players. Guess what? Roger Goodell has just as much power as he did then, because that's one of the concessions they made. So I suspect it'll be a slight revenue increase for the players. The owners will get the lion's share of the money, which is no surprise. And at the end of the day, the owners will have come out better for it than the players will have, although the players will have something to say, hey, look, we got this. It's not exactly what we wanted, but it's something. So I think you're right. This isn't really a fair fight, but I think we know that going into it.
Ryan, we're blessed to have D. Smith as a pretty regular guest on this radio station. And two questions here. A, how much trust is there in negotiation with Goodell and D doing the negotiating, and also the owners trusting Roger to do his part and the players trusting D to do his part in this negotiation? Because I think there's – I think both questions, you know, I don't know if there's a lot of trust in the negotiation back and forth between the player side and the owner side here and those two guys as the frontmen.
Yeah, no, that's a fair question. Back in 2011, you know, as I said, things got pretty contentious. And even up to D. Smith and Roger Goodell, Goodell made some comments that were sort of surprising, given the sort of the collegial tenor of sort of old people having a conversation about corporate-type stuff. It seems like this is going a lot better. Now, we'll see how the NFLPA feels about the bottom line in terms of what this all looks like. But they haven't hidden the fact that things aren't going like they want them to go, and there's not much they can do. There were some conversations a few years ago about potentially replacing D. Smith. I don't think D. Smith is doing a bad job. I think he's up against a pretty formidable opponent with extremely deep pockets. In terms of how the owners feel about Roger Goodell, they have no they don't hide how they feel about Roger Goodell, and I think when they are not getting what they want, and people sometimes confuse this. Roger Goodell is not a spokesperson for the NFL. He represents the owners. And if you understand that, everything else that follows seems to make sense. But when the owners have issues with Goodell, I'm sure they say, hey, I think we're paying you $44 million, not for your independent thoughts, but to make sure that what we want gets done. And he has done a pretty good job of pushing that agenda. So it feels like the two sides are closer than they were back in 2011. As we get to the 11th hour, things will probably get a little more heated, but I think this is going to go much more smoothly, and it sounds like it could happen even next week at the Combine. They knock out most of the details of what they hope to get accomplished in the next CBA.
Ryan, awesome as always with us, buddy. Appreciate the time today, man. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it. There he goes. Ryan Wilson, CBS Sports, at Ryan Wilson CBS on the Twitterverse. A great follow.
Let that sink in, by the way, for a minute, Danny. $44 million. Just to represent billionaires.
Just to be the shield.
That is phenomenal.
Because they...
It's the best job in the world.
Yeah. Well, you get lampooned, and guys like me drag you through the mud all the time, and you go, that's nice. There's
but
so
I
many-
can show up at any NFL stadium at any time and watch a game from a suite.
There are so many commas in my paycheck because I'm the foil. I'm the villain. I'm the guy that everybody loves to hate. That's what his job is. His job is to be hated.
The best.
If nobody gets mad at the owners, they get mad at Goodell. Last segment of the show, next, Brent Nanny here on the Fan. No, go anywhere. We're on the 18th green, about 7 feet. It's an uphill putt here for Grant and Danny. Pete is in for GP. Just finishing out the show right here. It's a little bit of a left-to-right break. Let's see what he does. Welcome back to the program. This is the last thing we're doing today before we go our separate ways, Pete. CWTW is up next. This just came across my desk via the old Twitter file. My Twitter feed had this. And I immediately texted Ryan and Heather Zimmerman. When I saw it, there's our buddy from Channel 9 Sports, Darren Haynes, is doing an interview with Ryan Zimmerman. It's about like being a girl dad. That's like a very fashionable thing to be now, and everyone's excited about that. That's cool. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not besmirching that. I'm saying I didn't have the volume up. Ryan Zimmerman looks like he's 24. Ryan Zimmerman looks like he is a early 20-something guy who has a cool Instagram influencer business of selling you up a keto powder that'll help you burn weight.
Best shape of his life?
Seriously. Have you seen this video? I'll show it to you. Look at him. I mean, forget about what they're talking about. Look how thin he looks. Looks like a kid.
Maybe he's been on EMP 180.
Last year, he was, and he told Grant and I this. We did the show we always do from the Nats Youth Academy. They have kind of an annual day out there, and it's always a lot of fun. We end up talking to a bunch of the players, talking about the academy and some of the great work that they do, right? And you couldn't help but notice how great a shape he was in last year, right? I mean, chiseled. And he's never been an Eric Thames kind of guy. You know, the way he's always been is so like loose and free, and his hands are always so incredible, and they still are, by the way, just in terms of his ability to field and hit. And he shouldn't have ever been a big muscle guy, right? A muscle-bound dude. I'm telling you, he looked cut up, and things were popping. And he lamented that physically in that way, this was the best, that stupid best shape of your life thing. This is why the foot injury, this foot thing that wouldn't go away, this whatever it is, the plantar fascia, blah, 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 was so frustrating because he was in such great shape. I'm telling you, he looks thinner now than he did last year. And it's not like he's never been a fat dude, but you know what I'm saying? Like, he looks like a kid.
But I think that's important. If you are dealing with foot injuries, even if you can knock 5 or 6 pounds off, I think it makes a huge difference. I mean, you talk to anybody in the training world, they'll tell you. I mean, if a guy can, you know, drop a few pounds, it makes it, as you get older, it makes it easier on your knees, makes it easier on your feet, your hips. And those are all the things as you get older that start to go bad on older players.
I think of Bruce Smith. That's the first example that comes to mind for me is Bruce Smith. Remember, like, he leaves Buffalo, shows up in Washington, and he's 20, 30 pounds lighter than he was in his prime in Buffalo. And, well, the reason is he wants to keep his speed. Well, what you lose is the ability to stop the run and push guys around, but he wanted to keep his athleticism.
Right.
And that's kind of what it reminds me of. But, man, this is one of those things where does that mean he's now hitting 300 with 40 homers? No. Who knows what it means, right? Does it mean he stays healthy for a full campaign? No. But I will say he's been an afterthought when talking about this roster construction. Because of Castro, because of Thames, because of Kendrick, and all these guys needed bats, and Cabrera, and, you know.
But even remember, when he joined you and Grant a few weeks ago, he said, you know, hey, I'm looking at, you know, 300 or 325, 330 at-bats. I mean, that's not a lot in the grand scheme of things. But as we know, his performance will dictate whether that the amount of at-bats will go up, and certainly his health is the other thing that will dictate how many at-bats
he
gets.
And he shouldn't be a 500 at-bat guy at this stage of his career. He should be at maximum what Howie Kendrick did. Howie Kendrick, while there are certain guys that are wired in ways that regular humans are not, and Zim is one, he'll come back from the disabled list and hit right away. Most guys have to, you know, get their timing back for a couple weeks. Not him. Just gets out of bed and hits. Guys like that who can stay in a rhythm despite not playing every day are a rare breed. And it's under-talked about, right, how difficult that is. So someone like Howie Kendrick, he played in 121 games last year, but he didn't play 121 games. He had a couple pinch-hit at-bats or something like that. He really was a player in about 100 games. Had 370 plate appearances in those games. And to be able to do what he did in playing on a day, off a day, 2 days on, 2 days off, whatever, is remarkable. Zim, I think, can do that too. Maybe not to the degree of 344 with, you know, 40 homer pace if he played every day.
If you broke down the stupid analytics of how efficient Howie Kendrick was with 370 at-bats, I mean, that guy was as efficient and productive as any player with only 370 at-bats, maybe in Major League Baseball history.
They don't win a playoff series without him. They don't win the World Series without him. I mean, think of the Cardinals series. We never even talk about this one. They're about to squander a golden opportunity. Of course, he comes up with a big two-out base hit. They never look back, and they sweep. Pretty remarkable. But anyway, Zim looks great. There's been a lot of me telling men they look great on the show today. That's just something that happened.
But you're just comfortable in your own skin, Danny.
I'm very
fine.
Very comfortable with that.
No problem with that.
None at all. I appreciate everybody checking out the show today. Hopefully GP will be back tomorrow. If he's not, he can take the full weekend off. He's entitled to it. He works every day. Pete, thanks, man. A lot of fun to hang out.
You got it, pal. Glad to do it.
Yeah, buddy. Always good. For Brandon, for Thom, I am Danny. CDB2W is up next. If you missed any part of the show, you can go to radio.com. There's a brand new rewind function on the back end. You can figure out anything that we've done over the last 24 hours, like break down Jordan Reed, his future, break down Trent Williams, Quentin Dunbar news, all that stuff available on radio.com. Again, CDB2W is up next. Appreciate you guys checking out the show. We'll see you tomorrow.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.